Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
The developments in Palestine stir up a range of emotions in South Africans: religious, humanitarian, historical, and personal.
As a young person, when I participated in the struggle against apartheid, I could immediately identify with the Hamas fighters breaking out of the Gaza Strip. It was a moment of excitement, a moment in which I would have wanted to step out of the ghettos in which we were living. And I could fully understand and appreciate the frustration under which the people of Gaza has been living and the fighters of Hamas have been operating.
But for others, the ongoing Israeli atrocities over successive campaigns of terror against the Gaza Strip in particular have shown them the true face of Zionism.
The subjugation of the Palestinian people is nothing but racism. And therefore, irrespective of from which perspective we come, if we are serious about it and if we have a shred of humanity, we must be opposed to racism.
I decided to stand for humanity and justice. What is going on in Palestine today is unequivalent to anything else that we've seen in this world.
When the whole world is looked away, that's what they've resorted to. And now for me, it said we need to continue to stand with them throughout this to show that they are not alone. And they don't need to listen to other media outlets where they say that they are the bad ones, that other people believe in their struggle and in their cause.
In fact, it is quite disappointing, it's distasteful, it's embarrassing that we still have South Africans that have experienced apartheid and still support Israel.
And it is that cohort of South Africans that protesters came to deliver their message to. The Zionist Center behind me has been quiet, but South African Zionists are active in the Israeli aggression and routinely send over South African citizens to fight in the Israeli occupation force. Protesters have demanded that the South African government take action against them. As Palestinians continue to face the brutally racist Zionist regime, those who had just a mere taste of Zionism's twin sister year have vowed to keep up protests. Assen City of Cape Town.
Palestinians in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah took to the streets again on the fifth consecutive day of Israel's war on the besieged Gaza Strip. The horrific footage from Gaza over the past days cannot help but shock, protesters say.
The airstrikes and the massacres being carried out in the Gaza Strip is under the protection of the American administration. And what's going on is terrifying. Israel cut the water and the electricity. People will not have access to food and fuel. Israeli occupation army is shelling residential buildings, and they're evacuated. Children, women, and elderly are killed and remain under the rubble. These images hurt the feelings. But unfortunately, we're speaking about a cruel enemy. Nothing will affect them. They're killers.
We Palestinians hold the same blood here in Ramallah and in Gaza, but it is their destiny that they are on the battlefield. Gazans hold the Arab and Islam flag. They continue to keep the Arab heads up. The least to do today is to take part in the protests and demonstrations. The least to do is going to the military checkpoints and areas where settlements are and clash with them. Our blood is one, and we are in the same path.
People were chanting for the Gaza Strip and for Hamas fighters while they were touring the main streets of Ramallah. Since the start of the Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, Palestinians say they struggle to live normal lives. As the streets were really eerie, Palestinian officials who were taking part in the rally pointed out that the bloodiest operation in Gaza requires immediate international intervention to protect the Gazans, who have been suffering for years because of the Israeli blockades and wars.
Today, all forms of comprehensive resistance must be adopted. This war has literally united people of different political affiliations, and with our unity, we can fight the genocidal war. This genocide is being carried out by the fascist Israeli regime. Today, it's urgently needed to address the United Nations to ensure the protection of Gaza residents. We must also work on prosecuting the Israeli regime for the crimes committed against the Palestinian people.
Israel has imposed a full lockdown, which tightens the grip on the daily lives of the residents of the occupied West Bank. A heavy military presence has converged all over the West Bank, preventing transporting between West Bank areas because of the closure of military checkpoints. Since Saturday, Israeli forces have killed over 25 Palestinians and wounded a few hundred others. Many of them were taking part in pro-Gaza rallies.
Protests against Israel's war on the besieged Gaza Strip have spread all over Palestinian territories. However, while Israel's onslaught on Gaza goes on unabated, more Palestinians are being killed in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds, Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
It's feared that Israel is engaging in an act of genocide across the Gaza Strip. Amid the deadly bombing, essential services have been cut off, all exits have been closed by the regime's forces, and vital aid is not being allowed in. EU foreign affairs ministers held emergency talks on Tuesday and had to concede that Israel is breaking international law.
The United Nations has already said that, as cutting water, cutting electricity, cutting food to a mass of civilian people is against international law.
It's suggested the sheer scale of the latest crisis could be an impetus for positive change.
This could be an awakening moment in order to re-engage with the problem of Palestine and Israel.
Campaigners in Belgium are condemning Israel's latest onslaught.
This mass aggression and bombing in Gaza cannot eliminate the action of the Palestinian resistance, who came flying and on the ground fighting for liberation of Palestine from the river to the sea.
We, the Palestinian diaspora, have to be united. We can see today the hypocrisy of the West still funding and supporting the Zionist colonies and settlements inside Palestine. This must be stopped.
The EU's executive arm is being forced to backtrack after Commissioner Oliver Varhelyi tweeted on Monday that all funding to Palestine is being cut off.
The announcement which was made by Commissioner Varhelyi was not preceded by consultations with any member of the college.
Regarding Israel's latest blatant flouting of international law, there's no sign that the EU will take any action. It has never done so in the past. We have already seen pro-Palestinian rallies take place around the world since Saturday. Now groups here in Belgium have announced they will hold similar events in the coming days. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The people of Pakistan have attended a massive rally in the capital city of Islamabad to voice their anger against the atrocities committed by Israel in the Palestinian territories. They expressed their solidarity with the Palestinian people and called for an end to Israel's occupation of their land.
We demand from international communities that they should take action towards this inhumanity and they should do something, put action towards this. Like, they are suffering for 70 years, the Palestinians suffering from 70 years, on the daily basis.
We're here to stand in support of the activities happening in Palestine by Hamas against the illegal Israeli occupation.
The demonstrators also slammed the United States for supporting Israel, saying the so-called champion of human rights is providing financial and military assistance to Israel for killing innocent men, women, and children in Palestine.
As America has announced the one-sided support of Israel, all Muslim Ummah, especially OIC, called its meeting and announced the support of the Palestinian fighters because they are under atrocities of the Israel. And all the Muslim Ummah has to support Palestinians.
The protesters urge the Muslim world to unite and put an end to attacks on Palestinians.
The firm stance of Pakistan is on Palestine's freedom and refusal to recognize Israel as a legitimate state reflects their commitment to the principles of justice, human rights, and international laws. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Sailing towards what they hope will be the last leg of an arduous journey to safety. But those who make it face a hostile environment, thanks to the British government's controversial plan to deport thousands of asylum seekers coming to the UK illegally to the East African country of Rwanda. The plan has a short but checkered history. In June, the UK's Court of Appeal overturned a high court ruling, which had said Rwanda was a safe third country for migrants to be sent to. This week, the British government is appealing that ruling here.
Critics say the Rwanda policy pursued by the Interior Ministry risks violating the UK's international obligations to protect human rights. They're raising concerns about the impact of the policy on victims of modern slavery and trafficking, and also on women, children, and disabled people arriving on British shores.
There are concerns about people being prematurely returned to the nations from which they are fleeing in the first instance, when an initial decision may be made. Is there a robust and independent appeal process for those people that would offer them protection whilst their claims are going through the independent tribunal service? There are lots of concerns about this ill-thought-out policy.
But the British Interior Minister Soila Braverman disagrees. Earlier this month, she dialed up her anti-immigration rhetoric in a desperate attempt to appeal to the Conservative Party faithful at their annual conference in Manchester.
The wind of change that carried my own parents across the globe in the 20th century was a mere gust compared to the hurricane that is coming.
Previously, she'd called the migrant arrivals an invasion, language that has led many to ask if her Home Office treats all migrants equally.
The UK take in far less refugees than any other country. And actually, if we look at the way that people from Ukraine fleeing for their lives have been treated, they were treated humanely. They were treated like human beings. They were welcomed and they were given safe passage.
It is all now in the hands of the Supreme Court judges. If they agree with the Court of Appeal, then the British Home Secretary's dream of sending asylum seekers to Rwanda in its current form is dead. Said Puriza, London.
Nigerian demonstrators who are waving Palestinian flags marched through the streets of Abuja chanting support for the people of Palestine and condemning the Israeli attacks on Gaza, where hundreds of innocent civilians have so far been killed. They expressed support for the Hamas Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, which was carried out in response to the Israeli violent attacks on Al-Aqsa. The protesters condemned the Israeli violent response against the people of Gaza.
Every right-thinking person in this world must feel bad over this daylight genocide in the eyes of the whole world.
The demonstrators said human beings are either brothers in religion or in humanity, and so support for the Palestinians becomes a duty for all Muslims, Christians, and followers of other religions.
The demonstrators here said they want Nigerians to break the deafening silence and condemn the murder of innocent Palestinians.
They also asked Nigerians to pray for the Palestinians.
People, and we all should be.
In an interview, the Palestinian ambassador to Nigeria condemned the massacre in Gaza and debunked the erroneous myth spread by the Jews as being a chosen people. He condemned the inherent racism of the Israelis.
Jewish supremacy, this is something that we are facing in Palestine in a daily basis. They are treating us today. They are declaring that they are fighting against a human animal. Could you imagine that? He did not mention that they are fighting against Palestine, a human animal. They considering us as a human animal.
The protesters burned the flag of Israel and America to signify the strong condemnation of their oppression and double standards. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
With our blood and with our lives, we support you, O Al-Aqsa. This was the chant that rang high in the streets of the Yemeni capital, where tens of thousands of Yemenis came out to express solidarity for the latest Palestinian offensive against Israel.
Today, Sana'a came out to say we are with Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, which will wash away all the oppressors and all of those normalizing ties and selling out Palestine. Today, Sana'a is letting the Palestinians know that we are with you and that this operation will lead to the end of all oppressors worldwide.
Ansar Allah officials at the rally congratulated what they called an unprecedented Palestinian attack that exposed just how weak the Israeli regime is. Muhammad Ali Al-Houthi, a prominent Ansar Allah official, believes power is the only initiative Israel will respect.
The only initiative respected by the illegal occupiers is the kind of power that was demonstrated by the great fighters from the Palestinian resistance groups. Their heroic and iconic actions will be recorded in the books of history and will never be forgotten by the enemy and will never be forgotten by the Muslim world.
It is an Islamic obligation to stand with the Palestinians and to stand against our enemies and to stand against America and Israel. The conflict for us is a matter of central and fundamental Islamic duties. By the will of Allah, victory is near.
The demonstration also condemned some of the Arab regimes who have normalized ties with Israel, declaring those who engage in such political efforts as traitors to Islam. Following the surprise offensive against Israel, senior Hamas military commander has called on all Islamic resistance movements in the region, including Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemen's Ansar Allah movement, to unite efforts to liberate Palestine today, not tomorrow. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to thee, addressing myself to thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to you for the hope of your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of thy creation, the summoner to thy truth. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
What is evidence are the war crimes that are being committed by the Israeli regime? Perhaps like no other time in Israel's history has it come out and said that it would commit war crimes by sealing off the strip. As the death toll mounts, many are coming out joining protest rallies in solidarity with the Palestinians. This is while there is a media war depicting Israel as the victim, while the Palestinians have been victimized throughout the decades. Here are our guests for this edition of the program. Press TV's Palestine Declassified joins us from Derby, UK. Also joining us, Ali Mala, is the founder of Al-Quds Day in Toronto, who joins us from Toronto. Welcome to you both. Chris Derby, I'll first start with you. This is kind of hot off the press. You may have heard about it, but it happened in the past, I think, about 30 minutes or so, where Britain has announced that it will send two Royal Navy ships to the Eastern Mediterranean and will begin surveillance flights over Israel. It says that's in a sign of military support. What do you think of that? And many are reading between the lines, saying that the UK, along with the US, has decided to show its support, which they say is a deterrence factor in a projection of power. But in essence, it may show how weak Israel is seen or felt by Israel itself, that the UK and Britain and the US have the need. And they have felt that they should send their military arsenal there.
Well, I mean, I think Israel, of course, has served as a strategic benefit for the interests of the United States and Great Britain over many years. And what I think has been absolutely deplorable is the response of the political class to the crisis that we are seeing unfold before our very eyes now. And the way in which the corporate media in Britain, I think, as you were alluding to in your opening remarks, and indeed the political class in this country, who are giving a very one-sided view as to what is actually unfolding in Gaza right now. And I've been, and indeed many people, I think, in this country have been utterly outraged by the way in which the political class and the corporate media have rallied behind Israel. We've seen, for example, the Houses of Parliament in Britain illuminated with the Israeli flag, 10 Downing Street, the base of the British Prime Minister, similarly illuminated in that way, and many public buildings flying the Israeli flag above town halls. But this isn't going down well with the British public, it's got to be said. And we've seen demonstrations outside public buildings. Indeed, on one occasion, a young man climbed on top of the roof at Sheffield Town Hall and tore down the Israeli flag and flew the a Palestinian flag in its place to great cheers from the crowd below. So Britain, I think, is certainly playing, I think, a very unhelpful role in this situation that has developed. And I think it does indeed, as you suggest, play to the notion that, you know, Israel, you know, isn't the sort of undefeatable entity that perhaps it's been thought of as in the past. The resistance now in Palestine, in Gaza, is considerably better equipped and better organized. And, you know, to mount the operation that they did, and it wasn't simply Hamas, it was all of the resistance factions coming together, this daring raid that they mounted, would have been unthinkable, I think, you know, a few years ago. And if Israel, you know, does press ahead with a ground invasion, then I think they will get a very bloody nose. It won't be a simple walk in the park for them, because they will meet, in my opinion, meet very, very stiff resistance on the ground there. And this indeed could indeed invoke Hezbollah's involvement and indeed other players in the region becoming involved. So, you know, for Britain, I think, is reckless in actually, you know, sending warships. And what British, you know, politicians should be doing is actually is playing, you know, an appropriate diplomatic role in you know, putting pressure on Israel to comply with international law. Because at the end of the day, it is Israel that are responsible for the tragedy that has befallen the Palestinian people. For, well, 75 years we've seen Israel inflicting oppression, terrorism upon the people of Palestine. And, you know, we have to call an end to that, it seems to me. And that's what, you know, sensible politicians ought to be doing. But instead, they seem to be banging the drums of war. It's totally unacceptable. And whilst they might be getting support in the British media, they're not getting support from the British public.
Well, when you talk about international law, I'd like to bring your attention, Ali Mala, if I may, to two statements that are made here. First of all, you have the Israeli energy minister by the name of Katz, where he said that literally making the announcement that we are blocking water, electricity, and fuel from entering Gaza, that in itself is a war crime. You have the presence of the U.S. Secretary of State and the U.S. Defense Secretary, where they have made statements, but the one that the U.S. Defense Secretary has made is quite an eye-opener, where he says, this is a professional military, in reference to Israel, led by professional leadership, and we would hope and expect that they would do the right things in the prosecution of their campaign, and we'll make sure that we'll leave it to them to define what their operations are going to look like. That's just giving a green light for Israel to massacre Palestinians, doesn't it?
It's not the first time. It's not the first time. And the illegal Israel, as we all know, it's the legitimate child of UK, Grand Britain, and, you know, Western colonial imperialism. And later on, it been adopted by the US. So in terms of cutting resources, water and electricity and, you know, other necessities of life on the people of Gaza, is not the first time they are doing it. And what's going on right now in Gaza, it's periphery from massacres, is not and are not the first massacres being committed against the Palestinians in Gaza and in all occupied Palestine. We have to realize that, you know, Israel is not alone, and it represents the spear of colonial imperialist project in the region, which is for more than 100 years so far, is inflicting pain, suffering, death, and destruction on Palestinians. And I'm sorry when I hear the word politician, what kind of politician they are, and where are the masses of the population in the Western world when we have, you know, leaders of you know, Britain and U.S. committing genocides against Iraqis, against Afghanistanis, and being involved also in the destruction of Syria. And here they are again providing, you know, unlimited support to the Zionist state to continue its war against the Palestinians.
Earlier on, we had one journalist, Chris Williamson, that in a couple of sentences that I'm going to pick out from his quote, I think sums up somewhat a very justified viewpoint that he has, where he said Palestinians did not choose the war Zionism has imposed on them. They have every right to defend themselves against 75 years of occupation. I mean, it's like a pressure cooker, right? We've seen the outbursts. We've seen the outbursts that have happened. We've seen the wars also, and it reached a point where, with this extreme cabinet, you know, people don't seem to really have grasped what was happening this past year, which is almost drawn to an end, where you had incursions almost on a daily basis, Palestinians being killed, albeit at a slow pace. You know, this pressure cooker exploded, which we saw Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Tell us what you think about the couple sentences there that this journalist made, and you know, whether this Operation Al-Aqsa Flood actually is a result of that in some ways.
Oh, I think it absolutely is a result of that. I mean, it's you know, he's hit the nail right on the head, it seems to me, in those remarks. I think it was only a matter of time. As I've already said, the resistance is becoming, you know, better organized now, and are in a better position now to mount the sort of operation that they did. But look, the Palestinian people have been subjected to oppression and terrorism by the Israeli entity for 75 years now. And all overtures, all peaceful attempts at trying to bring about a credible solution to this situation have been spurned. We saw the Great March of Return a couple of years or so ago, where Israeli snipers were just, you know, picking people off one by one, using exploding bullets to shoot people, and people who were wounded in the legs or in their arm almost inevitably meant, because of the type of ammunition that the Israelis were using, these exploding bullets meant that it wasn't simply, you know, a terrible wound that could heal, it meant amputations. And we saw you know, some of the Israeli settlers you know, viewing the these assaults on the Palestinian people having a sort of picnic and watching it from afar. So look, you know, the Palestinian people have tried every which way to, you know, find a peaceful solution. The Israelis have been impervious to that. They've also been impervious, of course, to international law, to the numerous UN General Assembly resolutions which have been passed, criticizing them. And, you know, the Western world, the British and the United States in particular, you know, need to recognize that, you know, they are on the wrong side of history here. They have a responsibility to, you know, uphold international law, but they are flagrantly disregarding it. And I think Britain in particular, you know, has a responsibility, a moral responsibility, because let's remember, it was the Balfour Declaration going back to 1917, which has actually led us directly to the situation that we are in here today. So I don't think, you know, Israel, you know, are the do have the strength that they once had. I think it also serves the strategic interests of the American and the British elites to have the Israeli regime in place. Indeed, President Biden said before he became the president, he was quoted, isn't he, was saying that if Israel didn't exist, we would have to invent it. So they, you know, clearly, I think, have, you know, set their cards, as it were, on the table. And, you know, I just hope that the strength of feeling which is gathering, in spite of the relentless propaganda, because people, you know, the vast majority of people in Britain anyway, are not from mainstream media seeing the reality of what's happening. They're not seeing the reality of the brutality of the Israeli regime. They're not seeing the brutality and the, you know, the genocide which is being inflicted right now by the Israelis on the Palestinian people. Carpet bombing one of the most densely populated places on earth, knowing full well that this will kill men, women, innocent men, women, and children. And we saw how the media here and across the world trying to manufacture consent for this genocide by coming out with lurid tales, which have already been completely debunked about the resistance fighters beheading babies and raping and so on. Complete lies. But this, of course, is the kind of playbook which is used over and over again in order to manufacture consent, to try and soften up sure. the British public. But thankfully now, thanks to the advent of platforms like Press TV and social media, people have an alternative way of finding out information. And increasingly, people across the Western world are not buying into the propaganda which is being spewed out by the political class and by these appalling corporate journalists.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Yeah, this whole media thing is a war that's being played out there. And Ali Mala, I'd like to ask you the way that they have manufactured some of these stories, which, as I guess they're said, has been debunked, and how that has actually had the opposite effect. Because there's an extreme, more than maybe before, an extreme media campaign to show how Israel is a victim and how that it's the Palestinians that are at fault here. But it seems like that's somewhat backfiring. But is it backfiring enough? And why do you see the media going at it so hard? Because if Netanyahu is going to be true to his word, where he said the Gaza Strip is going to be a deserted island, there's going to be lots of Palestinian deaths and blood on his hands, and maybe at the hands of Americans at the same time. But give us your synopsis of the or analysis of the media role in this whole conflict.
Well, from where I stand here in Canada, the mainstream media, whether in Canada or in the U.S., and I'm sure it's across the ocean as well, U.K. and Europe, they are very biased against the Palestinians to the point where I call them, you know, how much you hate Arabs and you hate Palestinians. You know, thanks God for the alternative medias and, you know, the independent bloggers who are exposing the lies and the propaganda by the Zionists and their supporters. But the bottom line is, it's not just the media. You know, it is kind of open confrontation between the people who stand up for justice, for freedom, for liberty, and the people who are aiding and supporting the occupiers and the oppressors. You mentioned earlier about international law. With all due respect, my brother and friend, what international law? Where is the international law to be implemented when we have rapporteur after rapporteur after rapporteur at the United Nations on the Middle East and Palestine, you know, raising the alarm about apartheid in Israel, about inhuman treatment of Palestinians, about all this type of stuff, and, you know, nothing happened. So, yes, Palestinians did everything they could, even, you know, the previous leadership, and which the current leadership continue to do, is, you know, they put all their eggs in the basket of Oslo, and what did they get? Nothing, just a humiliation. Here in Canada, you know, we are facing unbelievable campaign based on lies and deception by not only the mainstream media's outlet, but also by the politician. For heaven's sake, imagine a leftist party like the New Democratic Party is buying into this nonsense and lies. And you mentioned earlier about inside occupied Palestine, about the unity government, and that exposed the fallacy and the lies of the so-called Israeli left, who were demonstrating by the thousands in the street against Netanyahu. But as a matter of fact, Zionism itself, you know, bring them together, and their hate and animosity toward Palestine, and therefore support for the occupation, that who they are. So, you know, I don't have any hope on those left. And, you know, it's not just, you know, cookie pressure or something. It is ongoing. It's ongoing war and ethnic cleansing. You know, Ilan Pappé was not wrong when he wrote about the ethnic cleansing in Palestine. You know, yesterday and the day before, Norman Finkelstein, you know, took onto the blog and to the X, which, you know, Twitter, and, you know, the hate against him and against anyone who would dare and stand up, you know, for Palestine and for their life, actually, because what we are trying to do is, whether with demonstrations, with pressure, is to prevent more death, even though we know how limitless we are. But the media and the politicians label us as a barbarism, as, you know, terror supporters, and all this type of stuff. So I think it's an open war on the ground, you know, by the resistors against their occupiers, and also on every other scene in the around the world and the globe is between exposing the lies, confronting the negative propaganda, and asserting the rights of Palestinians.
Sure. You know, one thing that I'm curious about here, Chris Williamson, is, you know, there's so much talk about how there may be a new front, war front that may open up, like with Lebanon maybe, and then Syria. But there's another front that I think is opening up, and that's within the occupied Palestinian territories when it comes to the Israelis and these extreme settlers vis-a-vis the Palestinians. I mean, I'm looking down a list of incidents that have increased in its repetition and its occurrence, I should say. 24 Palestinians so far have been killed in the occupied territories. That number could be higher, actually. Ben-Gavir vowing to arm settler militias, as it's been described. They already have 10,000 rifles that they said come and pick them up. And they were actually encouraging that before, but now it's an open, all-out go after Palestinians. So we're seeing this kind of revenge attacks that are taking place, and the numbers are increasing. And that's something that may point towards where the future, the immediate future, may hold for what's going to go on in the occupied territories. Do you think that the Palestinians are actually going to rise up in numbers and go with what the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood is meant to do, which is somehow bring about, if I can say that, the liberation of the occupied lands?
I mean, I think they're forcing the Palestinians into that situation. I mean, this is what I think has precipitated the operation that we saw in the early hours of Saturday morning, the pressure cooker that we mentioned, and you know, stepping up the violence, which is already at an incredibly high level from the illegal settlers. I think will force the, you know, a reaction, as it were, from the Palestinian resistance in the occupied territories, as you say. And so, yes, I mean, I think that is something which is, you know, a potential development for sure. But of course, the other thing which I think is already happening anyway, and I think this is a result of the activities of the resistance prior to the operation on Saturday, early hours of Saturday morning, is the number of, you know, Zionists, Israelis who are leaving Israel. There was a poll earlier this year, I believe, for an Israeli TV channel, Channel 13, that suggested that 28% of Israelis were thinking of basically leaving, going back home, essentially, you know, from the country that they originally emigrated from to Israel in the first place. The operation at the weekend will have only increased that propensity to leave. And we're seeing the chaotic scenes at the airport. Israelis trying to leave the country, and you know, they are getting increasingly desperate. I mean, some senior Zionists, Ehud Barak, for example, you know, former Israeli prime minister, you know, was predicting the end of the, you know, Israeli entity within, you know, before the end of the decade. Yitzhak Brick, a former Israeli general in the Israeli occupation forces, compared the Israeli population to the passengers on the doomed Titanic. So I think, you know, the senior Zionists can see the writing on the wall that this project is unsustainable, and you know, they've elected now this even more extreme right-wing administration, which is, I mean, you know, this openly fascists. right. openly fascist, ministers in the government. So this is, this is a powder keg which is bound to explode. And if you go down the road that will certainly, I think, lead to a reaction from the Palestinian resistance in the occupied territories as well, for sure.
Ali Mala, Iran's leader has said that Israel has been damaged to the point that it's irreparable. What do you think? In 1 minute.
I think it is. I think Israel is in a big crisis because, the Palestinian population resistance and ordinary people are saying enough, and, they cannot and will not tolerate any more oppressions. You mentioned earlier about the settlers. We all seen the practices of those settlers against the women, children, the elderly. Now, you mentioned about maybe another front. Sayyid Nasrallah a couple of times, that we're ready when we are asked. But hope the Palestinian will remain steadfast in the resistance. And, maybe some pressure from inside Israel, on this war-crazy government.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're fresh out of time. Ali Mala, the founder of Al-Quds Day in Toronto. Thank you so much. Chris Williamson, thank you. Host of Press TV's Palestine Declassified from Derby, UK. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tavwe and the team, it's goodbye.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
In the United States, Republicans appear no closer to choosing a new Speaker of the House. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. House Republicans remained unable to agree on who should be the next Speaker of the House 1 week after Speaker Kevin McCarthy was removed, with lawmakers unable to coalesce around a new leader in a stalemate that threatens to keep Congress partly shuttered indefinitely. On Tuesday evening, 10th of October, two leading contenders for the gavel, Majority Leader Steve Scalise and Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan, outlined their visions behind closed doors at a lengthy candidate forum. Representative Mike Garcia of California estimated that around 30 to 40 House Republicans asked questions of the two candidates during the forum. But Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise appeared to be splitting the vote among their Republican colleagues. Representative Tom Macy of Kentucky said he asked both candidates what they would do on the eve of 17th of November, when the current continuing resolution to fund the government expires. He said Jim Jordan told members he would act before the deadline and push a long-term continuing resolution that would trigger a 1% cut in funding later. Lawmakers said Steve Scalise emphasized pressuring the Senate to take action on House-passed appropriations bills. The House has so far passed four appropriation bills, but they contain cuts that Democrats and the Biden administration are sure to reject, as well as social policy riders that Democrats on the House Appropriations Committee said were irrelevant and harmful. Kevin McCarthy, meanwhile, who had openly positioned himself to reclaim the gavel he just lost, told his colleagues during the private meeting not to nominate him this time round. Instead, he read a poem from Mother Teresa. "I don't know how the hell you get to 218, Representative Troy Nels of Texas said afterwards, referring to the majority vote typically needed to seize the gavel. It could be a long week. House Republicans took the majority aspiring to operate as a team and run government more like a business, but have drifted far from that goal. Just 10 months in power, the historic ouster of their House Speaker, a first in the United States, and the prolonged infighting it has unleashed are undercutting the Republicans' ability to govern at a time of crisis, both at home and abroad. Now the House Republicans push ahead towards snap elections on Wednesday, aimed at finding a new nominee for Speaker. The hard-right coalition of lawmakers that ousted Kevin McCarthy has shown what an oversized role a few lawmakers can have in choosing the successor. This is a hard conference to lead, said Representative Steve Womack of Arkansas. There are a lot of free agents. Both Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan are working furiously to shore up support. But both are easily winning over dozens of supporters and could win the majority of Republicans, which is about 110 votes. But it is unclear if either Scalise or Jordan can amass the 217 votes that would be needed in a floor vote to overcome opposition from Democrats. There are currently two vacancies in the 435-seat House of Representatives. Many Republicans want to prevent the spectacle of a messy House floor fight like the grueling January brawl when Kevin McCarthy became Speaker. We're in a similar situation that we were back in January, according to Doug Hay, a former Republican leadership aide, adding the political optics of the feud look terrible to the American voters. Some have proposed rule changes that Representative Patrick McHenry of North Carolina, the interim speaker pro tempore, is considering to ensure a majority vote during closed balloting on Wednesday before the nominee is presented for a full floor vote. Kevin McCarthy himself appeared to agree with the consensus approach. They shouldn't come out of there until they decide that they have enough votes for whoever they bring to the floor. But short of a rules change, Republican lawmakers would be expected to agree to a majority win process. Whichever candidate wins the internal private vote would be given the full backing of the Republicans on the House floor. The American newspaper The Daily Beast has also covered the same story and tells us more. The House Republican majority is struck 1 week after the ouster of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, with lawmakers unable to coalesce around a new leader in a stalemate that threatens to keep Congress partly shuttered indefinitely. On Tuesday evening, 10th of October, two leading contenders for the gavel, Majority Leader Steve Scalise and Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan, were addressing colleagues behind closed doors at a candidate forum. But they appeared to be splitting the vote among the Republicans. Kevin McCarthy, meanwhile, was openly ready to reclaim the gavel he just lost, but was seen by many as a long-shot option, unlikely to win back the handful of hardliners who just ousted him from power. "We're going to get the House back to work," Steve Scalise said on Tuesday ahead of the meeting. House Republicans took the majority aspiring to operate as a team and run government more like a business, but have drifted far from that goal. Just 10 months into power, the historic ouster of their House Speaker, the first in U.S. history, and the prolonged infighting it has unleashed are undercutting the Republicans' ability to govern at a time of crisis, both at home and abroad. Jim Jordan is a high-profile political firebrand known for his close alliance with Donald Trump, particularly when the former president was working to overturn the results of the 2020 election, leading to the 6th of January 2021 attack on the Capitol. Donald Trump has backed Jim Jordan's bid for the gavel. Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan presented similar views at the forum about cutting spending and securing the southern border with Mexico. Several lawmakers, including Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida, who engineered Kevin McCarthy's removal, said they would be willing to support either Steve Scalise or Jim Jordan. "I think it's a competitive race for Speaker because we've got two greats," said Representative Andy Barr of Kentucky. Andy Barr said he was working to help Steve Scalise secure the vote, but would be comfortable with either candidate.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.